Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. It's nice to be with you today at OC Talk Radio. And I'm really excited about our guest today. She and I had a chance to chat yesterday, and it was quite fun. And so I'm looking forward to our time today. Our guest is a personal organizational success coach, Danny DeNovo. Danny is also a podcast coach and an international best-selling author of a great titled book, Get in a Good Mood and Stay There. Danny DeNovo has a most fascinating background that includes being a paramedic and an attorney. I'm going to ask how those two came together. And it was through her various jobs and some difficult life experiences that led Danny to pursue a career as a personal and life coach. She is quite passionate about helping others discover success and meaning in life. As I was reading information on Danny, I read in Amazon, and on Amazon, they gave a little brief description of Danny's book, and I really liked what it said, so instead of rephrasing it, I thought I would just quote it. And Amazon said, "This book is a practical guide to take your thinking off autopilot and put yourself back in the driver's seat." It goes on, "Having gone through a rough spiritual depression and many failures in life, Danny DeNovo implemented a significant approach to shift her attitude and create a life she wanted. In this book, she shares with you her journey and the effective exercises she utilizes. Most coaches just hand you a map. Danny gives you the guided tour." That's great. So let's discover what Danny DeNovo has to say about getting in a good mood and staying there. Danny, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie. I'm so glad you could join me.
Thank you, Charlie. Thank you for having me on. I'm so excited to talk with you today.
Yeah, it was fun. Our chat yesterday was fun, so I'm really looking for a fun chat today. And you know, interviews, you know, we're supposed to start off with softball questions, right? So we just kind of jump into that. I never do that. Let's just dive right into the heart of your story, because it's so compelling. I want our listeners to get an opportunity to see it. And in Amazon, it was written, as I said earlier, "Having gone through a rough spiritual depression and many failures in life, Danny DeNovo implemented a systematic approach to shift her attitude and create the life she wanted." Tell me a bit about that journey that led you to write your book.
Yeah, so my journey, I don't know how interesting my journey was, but it certainly taught me a lot. Let's put it that way. I had a pretty normal upbringing, I think. For whatever reason, I fell into a very bad depression in my early teens that continued on through my mid-20s.
And, for whatever reason, you don't know the reason that it came on. It just, all of a sudden, you were a depressed individual?
It didn't come on all of a sudden. I remember being 13 or 14 and all of a sudden not really being excited about the things that I had been passionate about as a teenager. I grew up riding horses, and I loved my horses, and I competed in riding, and all of a sudden, I just wasn't very interested in being around the horses that much. My schoolwork, I had been a straight-A student. My schoolwork was starting to fall off. I had very, very ambitious goals of going to medical school at that time, and all of a sudden, college didn't seem all that important. I honestly thought that I was sick. I thought I was ill.
Yes.
Because I was lethargic and just not very interested in very much of anything. And I had a lot of doctors and other people say to me, "It's just teenage angst," or "It's just a phase." But that phase continued on and on. And the more people who sort of ignored what I was telling them, the worse the depression got.
What years were those, Danny? You know, You know, yeah. Was that like in the 90s?
That would have been the early to mid-90s, yes.
Yeah, that's surprising. That's really surprising that you didn't really get good help at that time.
Right. I think one of the problems was that I had been sort of highly functioning despite it. And so it was sort of brushed off from time to time. But I do remember finally getting the attention of one of my PCP at the time, and he suggested that I go and see a therapist. And I remember sitting down in her office and just telling her everything that was going on. And after 20 minutes, her saying to me, "Honey, you're depressed."
Oh, really? So you got a good therapist.
Yeah. Yeah. And I said, "What do you mean I'm depressed? I have nothing to be depressed about. I grew up in a good home. I get good grades. I have friends. I have a horse for crying out loud. You know, I've never seen, you know, I even had the awareness at that point to say, I've never seen poverty. I've never seen violence. I have nothing to be depressed about." And she said, "No, you're depressed." And unfortunately, at that time, they sort of had a quick trigger to start me on medication right away. And I think that was probably sort of the downfall from there.
Oh, really? Because, the medication didn't have a good impact on you?
No, it did not. Not at all.
Oh, that's too bad. And so that's happening in your mid to late teens, early to mid to late teens?
Yes. And it continued through graduation from high school into college. I went to college my freshman year. Don't honestly remember very much of it. I was just so depressed and having a hard time.
Oh,
still
my goodness.
Still did well grade-wise. Yeah. And then came home for the summer and really tanked. And when I went back for my sophomore year, I only lasted maybe 6 weeks in the sophomore year, and I had to drop out to get treatment because I was so depressed that I was very suicidal and just not really functioning at all.
So you were seriously clinically depressed. I think we talked about it yesterday. A lot of people say I'm depressed and they're really just sad. There's a big difference between sadness and clinical depression.
Yes, there is, very much so.
And so how did you get out of that?
Well, I went through a lot of treatments. I went through a lot of ups and downs, a lot of false starts. And then basically I remember laying in bed one night and I never slept. During the night. I was up all night and then I would sleep during the day. And I remember laying in bed one night with tears just rolling out of my eyes, you know, praying to God, saying, I cannot go on the rest of my life like this. You know, I did not have the ability to end my life. The one thing that sort of held me on was the whole idea that I couldn't deal with the fact that one day my parents might be asking why I would do that to myself, to them. So I sort of made a decision and said, you know, if I'm not going to end my life, then I'm not going to live like this. And so I'll do whatever I need to do to no longer live like this. And
boy, that's a great start too, isn't it? It really is. It really is a decision to say, I'm not going to let this, I'm not going to be defined by my disease, whatever that happens to be.
Right. So it led me to, honestly, I didn't really have great help. So I did. I made a lot of mistakes. And one of the things that I thought might help was I had been told I was always sort of the black sheep of the family. Let's put it that way.
Were you?
Oh, I really was. Yes. And I was always asking questions that no one wanted to deal with. And always asking, you know, why do things have to be this way? Why can't they be different? And I was always told that the reason my life was so hard is because I was always asking these questions. And if I had just sort of fallen in the line with everyone else, that things would be easier. And so I sort of convinced myself that maybe that was the truth. And I worked really hard to sort of fall in line. I got back into school. I finished. I graduated. I went to law school. I started to very much try to fall into that niche as best as I could. I took the bar exam and passed. I got a job. I got married and tried to do everything that you were supposed to do, like a normal quote-unquote person. And then eventually sort of fell back into a bit of a depression after all that was done because I just wasn't really being true to myself.
Because that wasn't the authentic you, yes.
Exactly, yes, yes. So I went on sort of a spiritual journey and I sought out people who I thought knew more about all this stuff than I did. And I read a lot and I listened to the people who I thought knew what they were talking about. And I just started piecing together things to help me get over the hump, so to speak. And that's sort of where the book started coming together.
Really? Really? Yeah. Now, I have two questions in the midst of this.
Okay.
First, my question is, what did your spiritual journey look like?
Oh, it was a bit of a mess. It was difficult because the people in my life at the time weren't particularly supportive of me going on such a journey. When I left the practice of law, I had a lot of people who didn't understand that decision and were not supportive of it. When I started sort of speaking more on a spiritual plane, there were a lot of people who weren't comfortable with that.
It wasn't in traditional spiritual language.
Well, I guess in some respects it was, but it just, I came from a very conservative family. I live in a rather conservative city, and change is hard, as you know, for anybody, but I think Kara was just a little bit more so.
Because you had so much societal pressure.
A lot of societal pressure, a lot of, old paradigms here, and just a lot of people who I think were afraid to see me change because me changing meant that they had to change, and I don't think that they wanted that.
Boy, it's just, it struck me. I just wrote last week, my blog was called The Illusion of Freedom, and it was exactly what you're talking about groupthink versus I think. And
right.
We just fall into this groupthink that we think we are free, but we are really just submitting to what group, society, or whatever affiliation we happen to be with, whatever they say, we fall into that. And that's really not freedom.
No, not at all.
It really is a submissive sort of servitude to the group. And when you are obviously an intelligent and sort of out of the box thinker, it's very difficult because you just don't fit. You're neither liberal nor conservative, and you're neither this nor that. It's a whole bunch of both ends.
Yes, I certainly do not fit. I have described myself often. I spent a lot of years of trying to jam a square peg into round holes, and it really took its toll. I think one of the best lessons that I learned on this journey was to truly not care what other people think, because that is the freedom that you're talking about right there. I have a 3-year-old daughter, and I watch her, and she is just her. She's just in the moment.
And you're allowing it.
Yes, and she does not care what anyone thinks, and she is just freer than anything you've ever seen. And so
Oh, how wonderful.
Right, that's the life that I want to subscribe to.
Yeah, that's... I'll show my music taste. My favorite band is a 90s, 80s and 90s band that still is popular today. Nine Inch Nails. Are you familiar with Nine Inch Nails?
Yes, I was listening to Nine Inch Nails last night.
Oh, were you really? I mean, there's not a lot of guys almost 70 that go to Nine Inch Nails concerts, you know?
Right.
And you know the song I love is it's Piggy. Do you remember the line in there?
Yes.
Nothing can stop me now because I just don't care anymore.
Right. Yep.
It's kind of like one of my mottos in life. And it's not like I don't care about life anymore, but I don't care about what other people think anymore.
Yes.
When you hit that point where you don't care what other people think, what is there to stop you?
Nothing. You become more powerful than anything at that point.
You know, I've been doing some reading of late, and I was reading, and, you know, it's not like I'm reading cover to cover Nietzsche, but, you know, I was reading Nietzsche,
yes.
And there's this truth that the best times are most always born from bad times. And Nietzsche writes a lot about the meaningful life as a result of the struggles in life. How do you feel about that?
I don't believe that I went through the struggles that I went through for nothing. At the time, they were very difficult, and I didn't understand. Truthfully, I didn't really put together why I had gone through such a bad depression so early in life until just a few years ago.
Oh, you understand it now?
But now I do understand it, and I see what it has brought to me and what it has sort of called me to do with respect to the coaching.
Yeah.
I think that I learned a level of compassion for human beings that I don't think I would have learned any other way. And I have true empathy for those who are struggling. And, of course, I do not want to see anyone struggle the way that I did, because I believe we struggle so much unnecessarily so. So, yes, I believe that the bad times are what define us in the good times, if that makes any sense.
Oh, it does make sense. Well, you know, it certainly makes sense to philosophers, because it's not just Nietzsche, but it is several philosophers and writers talk about struggle being that the human existence is about suffering, and it's about how do we handle and how do we deal with suffering, and what do we make of that? And that is just not a popular American concept. How dare you struggle? You know, you live in the grandest place in the world, and so you should always be happy and successful, and that is just not the truth.
Yes, I think that a lot of our struggle is, again, not necessary. We struggle more so because we fight the struggle instead of sort of accepting what is and then changing what we can about it. When you start sort of fighting those things that you don't have any control over is when you really start spiraling down. I think another good lesson that I have learned, right, is that I have control over one thing, and that's myself. And that's what I focus on.
Boy, that's a great insight. You know, that's why you're a coach now. That's a great insight. You know, that's what Viktor Frankl and, you know, Man's Search for Meaning.
Yeah.
That's what he wrote. He says the one thing you have, there is one thing you have control over, and that's your attitude.
Right.
You do, and you know, he wrote that from the midst of a Nazi concentration camp.
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Yeah. So I want to get, you know, we'll take a break in a couple of minutes, and that's when we're going to talk about your book. And I really have some, I can't wait to talk about your book. But I was going to ask something first, and that was, did I ask this question already? I think maybe I asked it kind of a bit, but how would you describe your life today?
How would I describe my life today? Very different from my life not even 2 years ago. I think that when you sort of open up your heart and your mind and your soul to a lot of the concepts that I've written about in my book, that transformation happens very rapidly. I am in a place now where I have to tell you, I never thought that I would be in even 3 or 4 years ago. I have met people that I never thought that I would meet. I have been places I never thought that I would be. And I get to spend the majority of my life helping other people in a way that I never thought I would be able to do. And so I'd say my life today is pretty great.
Oh, that is so wonderful. You know, and I think that's hope for all of us, because I had difficult times as well growing up. And in my early years, I went through some crazy times, and I would have never imagined that I am doing what I have done for the last 30 years. And what I'm even doing today as a retired man, I'm busier today than I was when I was working.
Right.
But it came from, I look back at all those experiences, and they were negative experiences, and I can genuinely say, if I had to do it all over again, I would do it exactly the same way, because it was those experiences that made me who I am today.
Right. You don't see that when you're in the midst of it. Sometimes you really have to be a little bit farther away from it to really appreciate.
Well, Danny, let's get into the good life and staying there, good mood, getting a good mood and staying there, but let's do that after a quick break.
Okay.
Hi, you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie Hedges, and I am with my special guest, Danny DeNovo, who is the author of an international bestseller titled Getting in a Good Mood and Staying There. And that is what we're going to do the second half of the show, is we're going to talk about the meat of this book. Now, Danny, one of the things that you write a lot about is habits and rituals that can result in developing a good mood and staying there. In fact, you write that you should be incorporating rituals that make you feel complete and like a better version of yourself. Now, personally, I'm a big fan of habits.
And
okay. I am a big habit.
We are big habits.
Yeah, sure. Really. I've never defined myself as such, but I think I just found a new adjective. What do you think it is that makes daily rituals so powerful?
I think rituals become sort of our pattern behavior. And when you have this pattern behavior running on autopilot, and these rituals that you have adopted are good rituals, then everything that sort of comes from that habit is also good. So if you train yourself to be in the ritual of eating well and exercising and taking good care of yourself, then when a decision comes around that could implicate your health either negatively or positively, you're more likely to go in the positive direction. And so that just picks up momentum and sort of snowballs in a good way on you. And the next thing you know, you're in a really great place because you have taken on these rituals and been devoted to them.
Perfect. I love that. I like the term ritual as well. Do you find a difference between ritual and habit, or is it just... or is it semantics?
Well, I think it's semantics. Ritual to me has a little bit more of a sacred tone to it, something that you've really adopted as your own that is important to you.
Yeah. So it really is not. It's a heightened dimension and a purposeful dimension of habits. A lot of time, habits don't have this real intentionality behind them. That a ritual, there is an intentionality behind a ritual, and it is with an intention of moving you forward or moving you to a good place in life.
Absolutely.
Now, I've read that you have five rituals, which, and I would repeat them, they're meditation, gratitude. Number three is remind yourself of the why. Four, be a dreamer. And five, do something that makes you feel good. Now, I'm very familiar with the first two, and okay. But it's the last three that really spark my attention. But so, okay. But let's talk briefly. Let's just, so we cover it, because it is so important. Meditation and gratitude are so important, but they're talked about it a lot. So they're
right.
They're talked about a lot, but nevertheless, they are critical. But I want to spend the bulk of our time on the why, be a dreamer and do something for yourself. Those are three unique and most powerful habits. So, tell me a little bit about meditation and gratitude. You know, what you have in mind with that?
Well, I have to say the thing that probably changed my life more than anything is my meditation practice. And I know for a lot of people, it's sort of a daunting task to take on if you're not familiar with it, or if you've never tried it, or if you've never seen anyone else do it before. And I think there's a lot of misconception about meditation as well, or this idea that it has to be sort of this perfect practice, when all you really need to do is sort of quiet your thoughts enough to hear what I would term your higher self. That voice within you that's really guiding you in the right direction.
Yeah.
For me, it just, yeah, it simplifies life. And it really puts me in tune with what I really want. And I believe that when you have a good, clear picture of what you really want, then all of your other rituals will fall into place. When you sort of have this haphazard idea or not a really good picture of what you want or where you're going, then you sort of stay stuck, because you might do something going in one direction one way and then maybe not so much the next day. So for me, that picture is the driving force behind everything.
Now, do you have a formal meditation practice, or is this something you developed on your own, or do you use an app or anything like that?
I do not use an app. I don't have any one formal method, I would say, that I subscribe to. I'm a big fan of going out and finding out what a lot of different people do, and then sort of taking the best practices from all of those things that work for me and putting them together. So I would say my meditation practice is something that I've sort of pieced together over time, but it is a non-negotiable part of my day, and I am incredibly diligent about it. I do it first thing in the morning. As soon as I wake up, I do not look at my phone. I do not look at anything. I get up from bed. I walk to another room, and I sit on the floor, and I begin my meditation. That way I have no excuse. I have no distraction. Everything is still very quiet, and that's how I start my day.
How long do you meditate?
Usually about a half an hour.
Oh, that's a long meditation. Yeah, because yep. I do 20 minutes. It's funny that at the end of the day, my meditation practices are very similar to yours. However, okay. I use an app. I use Andy Puttacombi's app that's called Headspace.
Now, yes, I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, he'll walk you through a lot of processes, but you know what I use now? As I use the oh, I can't remember, they call it professional or something like that. But it's 7 meditation periods, and basically all it is it gives you a ding when it starts and a ding when it ends. And there's
okay.
and you're making it up, because you know, I had done his practices and gotten used to breathing and gotten used to centering myself and focusing myself. He taught me really well how to do that.
Yes.
And then, after a while, I found the guided meditation to be sort of disrupting, that
yes,
I didn't want him talking during these times, even though it's very helpful. You know, it's a perfect way to start. And then now I am able to do this on my own. However, let's let our audience understand, for both of us, you do half an hour, I do 20 minutes, and that I do not have 20 minutes of total out of body sort of experience, you know, where it just, I like what my favorite, one of my favorite podcasters, Tim Ferriss, what he has to say is that if you get 3 minutes out of it, it was a good meditation.
Right. And, you know, every day is different. You know, some days I feel as though I get a lot of guidance. Some days I feel as though things are very quiet. And some days I can't tune into very much of anything. And so I might just spend the first 10 minutes saying good morning to my day and my life and, you know, what good things are in front of me. You know, it is a discipline, as you know. So it's just cultivating that ritual. And the more you do it, the better you get at it. And the better you get at it, the more the effects of it sustain themselves throughout your daily life.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. So now tell me about gratitude. Are you talking gratitude lists, or are you talking about sort of maintaining daily an attitude of gratitude? How do you define a ritual of gratitude?
Well, I think it's just a commitment to focusing my energy on things or people that I appreciate. So I do a gratitude journal. I do a list. I usually do a list of things in the present that I am grateful for and things in the future that I am grateful for. And then I will spend a little bit of time each day focusing on an individual in my life and writing a separate gratitude list for that individual. But then it's just, you know, being alert and sort of patient with yourself throughout the day. And when you're in a good situation, it's really easy to find things that you're grateful for. But when you're in a not so great situation, to sort of sit there and make yourself find something to be grateful for in that situation.
And you can always find it, can't you?
You can. Sometimes you have to dig for it, but you will find it. And there's lots of cues I've found that you can use too. So, you know, if I'm in traffic and I'm admittedly not the most patient individual when it comes to sitting in traffic, but I have found ways to be grateful for the time. And I use a siren as a reminder. So if I'm in traffic and then all of a sudden an ambulance goes past or a police car and there's a siren going, you know, obviously somebody out there is having a worse day than me. And so I use that to immediately come back to gratitude and why I'm grateful for my health, why I'm grateful that I'm safe, why I'm grateful, you know, that I have the ability to get in my car and go wherever I want, anytime I want. And then that just leads to, you know, whatever list you want to keep going through in your mind. But it's just that ability to shift from that negative cycle of thinking into something positive.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, that because I was just going to ask that question. It is a shift from a negative way of thinking, which is so easy because we have, as we were talking earlier, you know, we have so many social pressures, we have so many personal pressures, and there are so many things that drain us. And if we focus on those only, you know, we just end up with crummy days, you know, and it's just, and this habit of identifying what makes you grateful and then pursuing that truly makes a major difference. And I think it sort of leads into, which I really, really, your last three, I love your last, I mean, I love meditation and gratitude.
Right.
Because I've thought of those before. I haven't really thought too much about the last three, and yet they're a regular part of my life. I just have not identified that they're a regular part of my life. But I really like this. Remind yourself of the why. Talk to me about that.
Right. So earlier when I was talking about meditation and putting together sort of this picture of what my ideal life looks like and where I want to go, I think it's really important to hold that image in your mind. I've had a number of mentors teach me how important that truly is. And so I think if you're not waking up and sort of reminding yourself what you had set out to do yesterday and what you wanted to accomplish today when you woke up, you're not doing yourself a very good service to start off your day. And then just reminding yourself throughout the day of your why. So I really like to use triggers with this. The first thing when I wake up is I've devoted an entire wall of my bedroom to this. So I have pictures of places that I want to travel to, where I want to live. I have pictures of my daughter everywhere, you know, so there's a constant reminder of that I'm doing it for her. And I hang up quotes that are really inspiring and really motivational for me. And so when I get up and I wake up before I mosey into the other room to meditate, I'm immediately hit with this is what you started, this is what you want, and sort of like, you know, grab yourself and say, remember, this is what you want, this is why you're doing this. And just doing things like that throughout the day. I have a list of my goals that I keep on my phone, and I read those throughout the day, and I read them before I go to bed. So it's just a constant reminder of, you know, why I'm doing the things that I'm doing.
I like that. I like that a lot. You know, I have been what I've called a serial searcher of meaning for life.
You know, it's just, I like that.
You know, I have been, and now as I enter my later years, I really I've been able to identify that. I have an overall meaning that I think that an overall reason that for my existence, and then I have four activities that I must be a part of my life on a regular basis in order for me to live the kind of life I was DNA'd to be, that I was created to be. And I'll just tell you quite simply, because, you know, people may be wondering, okay, what is your purpose in life?
Right, what do you do?
Yeah, and it came from a quote that I read from Aristotle years ago, and it always resonated with me, but I never said, this is why I'm here. And he said, the purpose of every person is to contribute to the value of society.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, it's just that, am I contributing to the value of society? You know, and since I'm a member of society, am I contributing to my own value? But, you know, that goes to my family, that goes to the social groups that I'm a part of, that goes to my local community, and I'm involved in a nonprofit that we give water to people in Africa, and so, you know, I'm contributing to the value of people in a foreign country. And that makes my life. And then, so what are my activities that I need to do to accomplish that goal? And they're learning, creating, loving, and serving.
That's very nice.
If what I'm doing is involved in learning, creating, loving, and serving, I'm always doing something toward my goal, and those are my DNA. That's the way. See, they won't fit for everybody, but that's the way I'm hardwired. Yeah. But it's taken 69 years to figure that out. Hopefully, you sound like you're on a track where you're going to figure it out much younger, and therefore have a wonderful life.
Well, I hope that's the case. Yes, I'm definitely working very hard towards that.
Well, you sure are. Okay, so let's go to number four. And once again, this is really funny because the first one I said, I wrote my blog on, because I have a weekly blog and podcast, and I wrote the blog on freedom. This 2 weeks ago, I wrote a blog on imagination and about being a daydreamer. And here you have number four, be a dreamer. I so believe in that, Danny. I'd like your feedback on that.
Right. So to me, this is where I think where things really got off track for me in my adolescence. When you start hitting that time in your life where you're no longer encouraged to use your imagination so much, but to conform to everything else going around and start accepting these hard truths that everyone starts shoving at you, go to college, get a job, contribute to your IRA, have a family, do things the way that they're supposed to be done. When you start beating that imaginative process out of people is when we really start becoming, I think, sort of disconnected with life. The reason that we're here is to create. And I believe your imagination is the gateway to not only a good mood, but to your ideal life, right? Because when my thinking was dark and small, so was my world. It almost collapsed in on me. But when you have the courage to really think beyond all limits, that's when things open up to you that you never would have seen had you not just opened your mind.
I so agree. How do we help people, Danny, who feel stuck? There are people, I'm also part of a recovery group and a 12-step group, and there are people that really, you know, their only hope is to break an addiction, but they're at a point in their life where they need to overcome this addiction in order to do anything. But there is very little dreaming, even of the people I find that spend long time in this group, that they're not dreamers. They're not thinking really off the chart. This may sound crazy, but I'm going to do it. I know one year I wrote, I want to visit 5 countries, and I had done that within, the next thing I knew is I had done that within 2 years.
Yeah.
But it just became a dream. I said, I've never been out of the United States or, you know, other than Mexico or Canada. And
right.
Now, you know, I think I've probably visited, I think I counted like at 35 countries now.
Right. Incredible.
But it was a dream.
Sure.
And it began with it. So how do we help people who are stuck?
Well, I just like to be an encourager. I think when people meet me, they're not really sure how to take me. Because I'm the person that's saying, you know, if time wasn't an issue, if money wasn't an issue, if there was absolutely no barrier in your way, what would you do? What would your life look like? If you could have anything that you wanted, what would it look like? And then for my clients, I make them write it out. I make them write out the story of what their life would look like. And typically it starts out sort of small, you know, not, and then I say, no, go back and times it by 1,000. Make it the most ridiculous thing that you can think of. And the more that you sort of flex those muscles, the more comfortable you become with it. And so the dreams and get bigger and your imagination expands. And then before you know it, you're believing you could do things that you never thought you could. So it's really just sort of, again, making it a ritual, right? Working towards it. If it's something you've never done before, to me, it's no different than going to the gym. If you want to, you know, if you want to put on some muscle, you're going to change the way that you're lifting weight, right? But every day you're going to go in the gym and you're going to pick up the weight and you're going to put it down. It's the same thing, just a mental exercise. Every day I'm going to expand this vision a little bit further and see where it takes me.
That is so good, and it's so close to an exercise that I did myself when I first heard. I really encourage people to do it. I like your idea. Whatever your first dreams are, they're way too small. You need to think a bunch bigger. Are you any chance familiar with Debbie Millman?
I am, yeah.
You know, have you heard Debbie Millman's exercise that she gives to grad students and college grads that she says, and I love the way she starts this. I think she sets it up really well. If you were guaranteed success with no chance of failure. See, that's a great setup right there.
If
you were guaranteed success with no chance of failure, what would your life look like in 5 to 10 years? Right. And she says it is amazing the number of people that come back to her 5 years later said that, talk about their impossible dreams that have indeed come true. But right. I like that setup. It's similar to yours. You know, we make it 1,000 times bigger. But you know, that was helpful if you were guaranteed success and no chance of failure. But you're right there, and we do need to dream that way.
I think so. I mean, it's part of being alive, right? Life is not meant to be a constant struggle. It's not meant to be disappointing. We really can have whatever we want from it if we do the things to get us there, right? But there is work involved. And, you know, I think that's important for people to know. It's not just sitting down and meditating once and, you know, holding this vision for 15 minutes and then everything coming about. Again, it's like being in the gym every single day. You know, six months, a year from now, your body's going to look very different. Well, if you do these rituals, 6 months, a year from now, your life is going to look very different.
Exactly. Exactly. It's sort of, I like the idea of flexing, you know, I've not heard that term, but flexing the dreamer muscle and that, you know, working out on the dreamer muscle. On the daydreamer, I will have my wife and I just went to Arizona. It was a 5-hour drive, and we would listen to an audio book or a podcast. But there would be times I'd drive my wife crazy because I'd want an hour of just total solitude, where I'm just thinking, you know, because I can I'm crazy enough to just think for an hour without saying anything, because I'm trying to.
I'm that same person.
Are you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we drive people nuts, don't we?
I would drive the entire 5 hours in silence sometimes.
Oh, I could. I drove today. I started off with music, and I had a number of things I had to do today, and I found that I just kept the car in silence. I didn't have music, didn't have podcast, didn't have anything on. I was just quiet and pondering about life, the universe, and everything. But sure. Be a dreamer is big. So let's come to your last one here, number 5, and which I'm a big believer in, Danny, because I just had my nails done before the podcast. So
okay.
So that fits into number 5. Do something that makes you feel good.
Yeah, that's so great. I love that. Yes. Charlie, when I sort of made that decision that I was not going to live my life depressed, I started thinking, what can I do in some small way to at least start in that direction? And one of the things I told myself I was going to do is that every day, no matter the weather, no matter what was going on, I was going to spend 30 minutes outside. Because I love nature. I have a weird thing with natural light. I need it. And so I got a calendar. And I hung it up and I said, every day for the next 30 days, I'm going to spend, if I do nothing else, I'm spending 30 minutes outside.
Now, what does outside mean? Do you live in nature?
Yes. I mean, I don't know. I live in the suburbs, but I would go somewhere that felt more like the country. So a park, or I would drive somewhere. On a really bad day when I didn't think I could do very much, I literally would just step off the back porch.
Right.
But I made myself, you know, feel the air, see the sunlight, touch a tree, touch the grass. And I sort of did a quasi meditation at that point in time, but it was just enough to elevate my mood a little bit. And then I would say, wow, you know, I did this. What else can I do? I'm also a very big proponent of movement in some way, shape, or form. Exercise, walking, anything that gets your body moving, because, you know, everything's so tied together, you know, body, mind, and spirit. So I know for me that when my level of fitness is off, then everything else sort of falls off too. So the things that you know that make you feel good, you know what they are, let yourself do them. you know, block off time to do them. Don't put it off until tomorrow or next week. Make it important to you.
Boy, I am so fortunate that I've never done that with intention, but I have always done, you know, spent time doing things that make me feel good. Like I love movies and film. You know, I except in extraordinarily busy times, I probably go to the movies twice a week. You know, I don't.
Oh wow!
I don't see. You know, I'm not the blockbuster film sort of guy. I go to a lot of indie films, but I just love the discipline of movies, and I think it has to do with the dreamer in me too, because I'm transported to another state. And to a, you know, to another state of mind, and I do that, and you know, I think when it comes to like marriage and my wife, I also try to do things that make other people feel good, and that makes me feel good.
Of course. Yeah.
Does that make
Giving
sense?
Always so good. Absolutely. Yeah. That's a great way. Another great way to shift your attitude when you can't find your way out of a bad mood, do something to put a smile on someone else's face. And it's almost impossible not to smile yourself.
Yeah. I have always had as one of my goals, my everyday goals, is to help someone feel better about themselves. You know, I just,
well, that's a tremendous goal.
I was just in, I have a business club that I write the podcast in before, and I'm, you know, very familiar with all of the servers in attendance. And one of the servers was really going through a difficult time, and she was struggling emotionally. And somehow God gave me insight of a couple of friendly things to suggest to her, and she walked away. She walked up to me with this, you know, sort of dire frown on her face, and she walked away smiling. And I think, you know, that was worth the day.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Danny, we're running near our time. I wish we had more. I love what you are doing. And so people can get your book. Get in a good mood and stay there. It's on Amazon. How else can people get a hold of you?
Well, I have a website, DannyDeNovo.com. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook under the same names, and Twitter, actually. And I'd love for people to reach out with comments or just to chat. If they want to send me a private message, I'd love to do that as well. And they can also listen to my podcast on iTunes or Google Play.
And what's it called?
The Danny DeNovo Podcast. I kept everything very simple. Everything is under my name. So
sure.
Yeah.
Well, we'll put that in the show notes and give people an opportunity to get a hold of you. Danny DeNovo, it was a blast doing a show with you today. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Charlie, and thank you for everything that you're doing.
Thank you. I want to thank our listeners for tuning into The Next Chapter with Charlie, and to be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.